The History of the Leech Lake Reservation with Elaine Fleming. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Grant.
Bushu and then away Magani Doug. Beshagu Benesia Quay in de Gomong and Du Dame. Elaine Fleming in Dishina Kaz. Ga Uzisquaja Mekag in Dun Jabak, Aye. Ga Mesqua Wako Kag in Da. Today I'm going to continue the conversation about the Ikwewuk, the Ojibwe Ikwewuk. In our migration story, it's told that we came from the East Coast, that we would have our ceremonies in the morning, and when the sun rose, we would greet the day with prayer, that's where Nanabushu's son, his second son, was given the gift of tobacco so that we could use that tobacco, Asema, to send our prayers up to Creator, to creation. And in that story, we were told that we would go to the place where food grew on water, Manomen, the sacred food of the Ojibwe. And so in our scrolls, it shows that our people went down the St. Lawrence Seaway and over and around and under the Great Lakes until they came to an island that's now known as Madeline Island. And that's where they found the food that grew on water. Eventually, the Ojibwe would travel farther inland. And our people of Leech Lake, we eventually came to the Big Leech Lake, where they say that the first Ojibwe who went on the lake actually saw a giant leech. And on Otter Tail Point, there's a place called Two Points. And in the scroll, it shows that that's where we had our first Odena, our first village. And that's where we built our first Madewan Lodge. And so Two Points on Otter Tail Point is a very, very important place to our people spiritually and historically. In 1785, the Northwest Company established a trading post on Otter Tail Point. And in 1786, they established another trading post on Oak Point. So from the 1600s until early 1800s, there were long lines of canoes that traveled each year across the Great Lakes. And they carried in their canoes tools and cloth and weapons from England and France and other European countries. Slowly, these goods would change the way the Ojibwe looked and the way we worked. During this time of fur trade and trapping, the Ojibwe men killed the animals. And they killed the otter, the muskrat, the beaver in particular, the bear, the marten, the fisher. And the Ojibwe woman would scrape, stretch, and cure the hides. I mentioned last time that the Ojibwe practiced polygamy. And it was during times like this that the men would marry more than one wife. Their Wijiwagun, the one who walked with him, would be from the same family. Generally, they would marry sisters, and these women, these wives, would work together and support each other. And it was really important because women worked really, really hard during these times. And again, just to mention that the men, too, that they lived very dangerous lives during this time as we were moving west, and we were pushing on the Boanug people, the Dakota people, that there was long, long periods of violence with the Dakota people. And also the men, they worked on the lakes, where they always say there is that great spirit that we must respect within that water when we go onto the lakes, because it is much stronger than us. And so oftentimes our men would be lost to us. And oftentimes you hear about the grandmas taking care of the children. So for the Ojibwe people, we had gendered spaces and places. For instance, the moon, Mamanan Dibiki Gisis, that old grandmother, night sun. She, in our story about Nanubushu, when his grandmother Nokomis, who was to teach him about life, that when she was ready to leave this world, she would travel to the moon, and there she would watch over the people and the women in the darkness. And so our women, during the full moon time, we look up at the moon and we have our ceremonies, and we remember all those women in our lives who have helped us and given to us. Another gendered space would be Aki, Nimama Aki, our mother, the earth. She is a rock. She is hard like that, always there for her children. And all her children are equal. The earthworm, the grasses, the tree, the stones, the bears, the two-legged, the people. We're all equal, and she loves none of us more than any of the other of her children. So the in our spirituality, we look at women and we respect women even in our spiritual ways. The traditional roles of the women, as I said, were we worked to help our communities in seasonal rounds. And also in doing that, we had women's cooperatives. And so what happened to the traditional roles of our women when the fur traders came? There were economic relationships that were established, and these relationships were reciprocal in nature, Brenda Child says in her book. And these relationships would bring about social change. This change would be reflected in things like our religion, our language, our gendered roles, the foods that we eat. And the European men that came would come to depend on the Ojibwe women for their very survival. I remember one time going to the Grand Portage Rendezvous, and that's where my grandfather was from, James Droulard. And they have this huge, huge trading post up there. It looks like a fort. And outside of it, they have the rendezvous where they have all these voyageurs, people dressed up as voyageurs. And these voyageurs, they have all their women with them. And they were all white women, but they were white women who were dressed up as Ojibwe women. And their outfits or period pieces and jewelry were really quite beautiful. And when I first saw these women with the voyageurs at Grand Portage, I knew there was something wrong. And it took me a while to put my finger on it. And what it was that these women were not white women. The women who had the relationships with the voyageurs were actually the Ojibwe women. The voyageurs, the traders, when they came here, they had no wives or children with them. And so they would marry the Ojibwe women. They would have relationships with the Ojibwe women. And eventually, the fur trade business, their center became located in the Ojibwe communities, like I said, at Otter Tail Point or at Oak Point. And the traders found that it was necessary then to have Ojibwe partners, and these women would help them. And these relationships would benefit not just the white traders, but it would also benefit the Ojibwe women's families in their own communities. These women themselves would become intermediaries between the traders and the Ojibwe communities. Sometimes the trader husbands, they would leave their Ojibwe women. It wasn't, sometimes it might be just a year-long relationship. Trading families in Minnesota that are well-known are the Renvilles, the Faribaults, the Bolyoles, the Akins, the Bongas. But our Ojibwe women were essential to the seasonal economy. All during this time, before the traders came and when they were here. And we contributed to the seasonal economy through our gardening and our gathering and our ricing. We would always store enough food to last over the long winters, and any surplus that we amassed would be used to barter and to sell to the traders and the settlers. And the fur trading business itself was also a seasonal round. The Ojibwe women, they took leading roles in bringing the European trade goods into their own labor, into their household. And the women exchanged that garden, as I said, that garden produce, like the corn, also the berries, the wild rice, and the maple sugar. And it was just essential to the lives of the traders and to the lives of the settlers, as it was to the Ojibwe people. And so the Ojibwe people during this time, they had great respect for our women. And the women were just totally essential in the trading, the fur trading era. And we'll continue this conversation about what happened then to the gendered roles of the Ojibwe women during this time. And I say, Miigwech, Bisindawi Yeg, meet you. Yeah,